podcast with Dan and Scott. Hottest golf podcast, whether you like it or not. First one back in the day when that's a put at the park. 7 p.m. special where they played after dark. From the birdies to the focus to the losses and the win. Welcome podcast, patron to the show. Lead the pen, get busy golfing or get busy dying. Hottest golf podcast and I swear I ain't lying. Yeah. Leave the pen.
Welcome back, podcast patrons, to another episode of Leave the Pin Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Dan. Today, I got a very special guest, Mr. Craig Walton, the proprietor, if you will, the man in charge of the RDU Golf Tour. You've probably seen them all over Instagram, seen them online. Maybe you've even played in a few of their events. And I know that there are listeners out there that have played in a bunch of their events because they are the ones that put me on to Craig and the tour. Craig, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me on. And yeah, I've been listening for a while and glad to chat with you, man.
For sure. So dude, you run a golf tour and you run a pretty successful golf tour that I just looked on Blue Golf for a few of the tournaments and I went through and you've got some tournaments with 50 plus guys in the field. You got to walk me through how this all kind of came to fruition.
So kind of by accident, I initially started all this and didn't expect it to become the size it was. But I guess I'll start from the beginning. About 2020, this guy named Vic Garrison started a subreddit called RDU Golf. The original mission of it was just kind of keep people updated on course conditions, kind of deals going around, just like fill out a foursome, things like that.
Okay.
Turned into, I have a knack for doing some course reviews, writing things like that on places I play. And I play in Raleigh a lot in central North Carolina. So started posting those. Then I one time mentioned, hey, I need two people to fill out a foursome at the Preserve at Jordan Lake. So those two people showed up. We had a little foursome. I posted about a week or two later, hey, anyone else? We ended up having two tee times. Then it turned into six tee times. And then after a couple weeks, it turned into about 40 people. And in which still blows my mind, but in 2020, we all know golf kind of had a big blow up in North Carolina. Courses never really shut down. So that turned out very convenient for us. We all needed kind of our escape. So it wasn't really feasible every 3 or 4 weeks calling a course being like, hey, can I get 40 people on a Saturday in peak hours? So that just became a logistical nightmare. So back in, I guess this was early 2020, late 2020 in December, I had about 3 weeks off of work. So I just set up a website. I called a bunch of courses, just booked everything out a year in advance so I could kind of make my schedule for the entire year and pre-book these things. And it was kind of like a Field of Dreams thing. If you build it, they will come. And they came in droves and kind of caught me off guard. And I'm still humbled to this day on the fact that people want to come and play golf in something that I just kind of kicked up.
All right. So in the beginning, you said that you didn't think it would get as big as it did. What were you expecting in the beginning? How many tournaments did you kind of plan on having?
I honestly didn't have any numerical expectations. I just thought it was going to be kind of recurring, maybe like 40 to 60 guys having fun. And then it turned into just kind of a fight to get spots in some events, which is strange. In that in 2020, during kind of the ad hoc year where I was just kind of doing things through the subreddit, we ended up having like 10 events through that year. They weren't like, there wasn't a season long leaderboard, there weren't points or anything. It was really just come out, meet some people. I'll throw out like a customized visor for the winner or something like that, but mostly just meeting golfers and just having some fun.
Which so is kind really, of kind of bare bones in the beginning.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it really is just kind of the name of the game of what we still are to today. It really is that community-based thing. The tagline is generally a golf league for everyone. Because like we do try to make it open for literally every level and style of golfer possible. So that's what we kind of went with in the beginning. And then when I set up that 2021 year or 2021 season, that one where I just booked everything a year out to kind of save myself some stress, that one I ended up booking about 15 events through the season. And the fields were generally initially, I called courses, got tee times for between 36 and 48 people. per event. And then I had to go back and call courses and ask if I could get, you know, more times after registration ended, because people showed up. It was cool.
All right, so let's get into that. What is that conversation like when you're calling a course? Because I'm sure now after 2-3 years of doing it, you've got a good rapport with some courses. There's courses that probably love having you guys. They book full tee times. Those guys come back. They get practice rounds. They buy food, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. But what is a initial call like to a place? Is it face-to-face? Is it calling them on the phone? How's that work?
Yeah, it depends on the course. You kind of called it out at this point. I kind of know every head pro in the area to some degree, and I kind of know what style they're going with. A lot of it is kind of cold call emails to start, just kind of a template email, and especially the courses that I specifically like, I'll kind of gush about them a little bit. It's like Raleigh and the Central North Carolina area has no shortage of like just very enjoyable, playable courses.
Right.
But I'll shoot a message out saying, hey, this is kind of what we're doing. This is who we are. We would love to come out to your course. And, you know, these are the tee times. One big thing about us that I do have to just make clear to every course is that we are a golf league specifically for like the weekend warriors. So we don't do weekday stuff, which a lot of courses, you know, prefer larger groups then.
Sure.
But after I kind of talk through them, we work with the course, because one of my other main missions with this is not just the golfers and the community aspect, but the golf course and actual golf industry community in Central North Carolina. I try to look out for them and their best interests as well. So instead of like trying to necessitate, you know, peak tee times for 30 to 60 people, I try to steer later in the morning or in the afternoon during the long hour days. Which the long hour days are now gone, which I'm sad about. But
oh, believe me, I know.
Yeah. So I pretty much talked to the course and asked, hey, what's the most beneficial way for mutually beneficial way for, you know, us to have an event like this at the course? And then I chat with the pros. It works out here or there. And we get a group rate number from the course. And I see what we can do about dates and work it into our budget and all of that good stuff.
Do you ever get any pushback from courses? Any courses I've been like, look, man, we don't want you guys here. Yeah, I'm assuming probably the public ones aren't like that, but are the what's harder to deal with, the public or the private ones?
It's kind of funny. There's a lot of public courses that just arms wide open. Mm-hmm. Super enjoyable. Love those guys. Then it's funny because there are also a number of public courses that have kind of just recurring memberships. And right now, they have their annual passes, a lot of them have oversold. So ironically, some of the public courses in Central North Carolina are harder to get events at than private courses.
Just because the lack of overall tee times.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And can't argue with that, because I would never want to displace a course's members, because that's clearly their priority. But with that, there are also a number of private courses in Central North Carolina that love what we do, and also at this point, a couple years in, we have a good relationship with. So arms wide open from them as well, and their head pros are just clear golf people, and they love just the community aspect of anything. So I love those courses, and you know, some of my favorite ones. It also helps that anytime we do have an event at a private course or any course that wants me to, I'm always glad to pass on membership information, and it really does get exposure for a course, because it's a lot of, the league has a lot of golfers that are just very interested in playing more golf.
Right.
Logical, makes sense there. So it kind of gives courses kind of a target market of people that may be interested in a membership as well. So kind of mutually beneficial there.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes perfect sense. And you figure, especially private courses, there being a lot in and around that area, mm-hmm. it's hard to kind of get to the top of the ladder, you know, make yourself shine above others, unless we talked off air, like Country Club North Carolina, unless you're a place like that, that kind of everybody knows, if you're a smaller course, mm-hmm. this is a great way for them to gain some exposure to the people that they are specifically targeting.
Absolutely. And there's, again, no shortage of good courses in Central North Carolina. One of the beauties of being in Raleigh is Greensboro is stacked with public courses and private courses as well, and it's not far from Raleigh. And on top of that, we know Pinehurst is 45 minutes to an hour from Raleigh as well. Like, where I'm at in RDU, there's just no shortage of good courses to call and reach out to. So it just kind of works out in, selfishly, in my favor a little bit, because there's an endless amount of courses that I can chat with. But also, I want to reward the courses that are doing things right, that are kind of on the, not lower scale, but kind of on the lesser known scale. Sure. I love hyping the courses up that really, really should be known, kind of those hidden gems, which I'll go ahead and give a little plug to one of the best hidden gems in North Carolina. If you're ever in kind of like Middle Eastern North Carolina, over in Snow Hill, Cutter Creek is easily, hands down, one of the best hidden gems in the state. It is just absolute pure golf. It is just a full vibe through and through. So that's the type of course that I also love hyping up, as much as I love hyping up private courses as well. Like, there are plenty of hidden gems that need to be known too, that I try to bring my golfers to.
Yeah, understood. Hey, podcast patrons, it's Dan. Sorry to interrupt this episode, but just wanted to make you aware that we are now being sponsored by Canmore Sports. You've seen it in our Instagram stories, you've seen it in our posts and our reels, and you've heard it right here on Leave the Pin Podcast. Canmore Sports does golf GPS to perfection, whether it be the watches, the handheld devices, anything you need, they've got. Know your exact distances, increase your greens and regulations, decrease your putts, and look like a damn better golfer out there doing it. Go to our Instagram page at Leave the Pin and check out the link to save 15% off all Canmore Sports products. While you're at it, leave us a rating and a comment on iTunes. Help us grow so we can serve you, the people. Now back to our episode. All right, Craig, so I'm from Northeast PA. You guys are down in Central North Carolina. Let's say I'm down there. I'm free for a week. I noticed that you guys have an event coming. I don't live down there. Can I join? Can I play? How does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of our big taglines is a golf league for everyone. All of our regular season events are fully first come, first serve for registration. We do have a couple caveats with private clubs and our just major events. With those, generally, I put a one or two event restriction. So you have to play in one or two in the past. So when we are at one of the private clubs or one of the like bigger known clubs, we just want to make sure that it's people that are invested in the community and not just trying to leverage us as kind of as like a plug to play a private course. So we really do try to reward our people, but the vast majority of our events are first come, first serve, wide open to literally every golfer. And we have people all the way from plus four handicaps to like 35. So it really is just a spot for any golfer that wants to come out and have some fun.
I think that's a great point to make too, because so many people, when they hear the word tour and golf, they say, oh, like, I'm a weekend hacker. I take mulligans with my friends. Sometimes I play scramble. Sometimes I play by the rules. Sometimes I don't, but I'd like to be more competitive. Mm-hmm. But they hear the word tour and they're like, nope, I'm not that good. I didn't play college golf. I can't do this. But in essence, they actually can, right?
Yeah, they absolutely can. That's one of the funny misnomers with competitive golf. If you're ever playing golf with a foursome or your buddies or anything, it's competitive golf. So just using transitive property, if you know you're just doing that same exact thing, you know, in just a larger field, hey, it's just the same stuff you're doing every weekend with your friends. Sometimes there are just a little couple more rules and regulations around it. But really, one of the initial missions of starting this all was there's a lot of people that have looked at competitive golf and think it's completely unattainable and you have to be like a scratch or a plus handicap. Like, that's not real. Like, I don't, scratch golfers are just not real in my mind. They're just so good. but there's so many of us. I think I read something recently of like the average handicapper is like a 12 or 13. And like, that's just a normal golfer. And that's just perfect. So they should be able to compete as well. So there's also plenty of people that played competitively in the past, but we know life gets in the way and, you know, you have to go work in some corporate job or something like that. but you also still have those juices in your body that you want to still throw down a little competitively. So I just wanted to create an avenue for everyone within the spectrum to get out and be able to play together.
Yeah, I mean, that's the coolest thing, right? Is a kind of a no pressure event. You know, any pressure is self-imposed. Yep. You know what I mean? You're not putting any pressure on. No one else is. It's all what you perceive. And to have a vehicle that you're presenting to people to do that in is phenomenal. I mean, it's super cool. And I think especially people that may have been athletes in high school, in college, it does get those competitive juices flowing for them a little bit. Gives them something to look forward to, you know, for that week or on that weekend.
Yep. And one of my favorite things is seeing someone that did play junior golf or like competitive stuff in the past, or just any sort of athletes just in the past, because we know an athlete's an athlete through and through. But people that have played junior, kind of fell off for a couple of years, real life gets in the way, and they just start playing like complacent golf with their buddies and things like that. All of a sudden, they get their first taste of, you know, getting back into a little something. And then I absolutely love seeing those people. All of a sudden, they're at the range more. Their handicap starts to drop. They just find that competitive edge again, and they just have a good time. Like, those are some of my favorite stories through all of this.
Yeah, I feel like it almost forces a person to get better, right? Because everyone that plays this game, you and I both know this, we are kind of our own, you know, harshest critics. And we don't need anyone else telling us, hey, you need to practice a bit more. Like, you know, we know that. And having this tour available to people in that area and surrounding areas gives them kind of that motivation. I know it certainly would if I had that, you know, around where I live.
Absolutely. And one of the fun aspects was after the first season, everyone was able to just retrospectively look at the like points leaderboard at the end of the year and say, you know, if I didn't miss that like 2-foot putt, or if I, you know, did this shot a little bit better through the entire season, I would be so much better like in the standings. But then people come out the next year and all of a sudden, you know, early in the year, they know exactly what they have to grind for. And you know, our second season that just wrapped up recently, a lot of people used the lessons from that first year and, you know, just kind of set new goals for themselves. And it was great to see. We had a few people win events this year because they shot their new personal best in front of a bunch of people. And those are the things I love to see. And I love when people get rewarded for actually showing up and, you know, setting a new personal record.
Yeah, the sense of pride just must be through the roof. I mean, these people must just be beaming, because you know how easy it is to hit a good shot on the range, right? Because there's another ball behind you. You can just rake another one in if you need it. And then you know the difference between bringing a range game to the course, even when you're playing with your buddies. But then imagine shooting your best score playing in a competitive arena. I mean, that's the ultimate.
Yep. And this one guy, perfect example, Mason Perry, one of the most humble, just enjoyable people in the league. He started taking lessons earlier this year, kind of newer on the side of golf, broke 80 for the first time in event, ended up losing in a scorecard playoff. But the guy could not have been more excited just to have, you know, set a personal best with a bunch of people that he really enjoys. And like, that's really what it's all about. You know, placements and wins and things like that are cool, and hopefully they come along, but really it's what you do along the way and how you get there. So
yeah,
seeing those things really is honestly one of my biggest takeaways from the league and just starting all of this.
Well, hey, Mason, congrats. That's awesome. From someone that's played, you know, semi-competitive golf, I know that feeling and I know how amazing that is. So good on you. You talked about Mason kind of being new to golf. What's your golf history? Were you a junior player? Did you play in high school, college? Where'd the love affair of this game start? Because you obviously have to be in love with it to start a golf tour.
So it's, I don't know, it's kind of funny. My oldest brother will disagree with me, but I really started actually getting deep into golf my final year in college. I went to East Carolina. And there was a course called Bradford Creek. I went out there regularly. When I came back to Raleigh, there's this nighttime par 3 course with stadium lights. And I would just go and play there regularly. So around the time I turned 21, my buddy and I needed a place to go out and have a few adult beverages. And we're like, you know, we're not really like bar or club people. And we kind of want to be outside. So that's really how we picked up golf. And then my brother will argue because he played golf his whole life. He tried to talk me into playing all the time. And naturally, like any little brother, I did not listen to him. But luckily, he did take me to the driving range a bunch when I was growing up. So I did actually have a little bit of like a grip and a swing in my body prior to actually starting. So I got a little head start. But after college, I played, met some people, had a little bit of fun, didn't really take it seriously, just that standard like weekend warrior out there having some beers and things like that. Then I moved to Richmond, Virginia for work and didn't really know anyone. And I ended up starting to go to Independence Golf Club, a fantastic course right in Richmond, but they had all you can hit golf balls for $15. So I would just go out there after work until the sun went down or they kicked me off the range and just grind away. And all of a sudden I was like, I like this. I'm getting a lot better really fast. And then I came down to North Carolina. I played in my first little amateur event, just like something kind of similar to this. And like, I love this. Like I love a little competitive edge. I love this game. I love the people that I'm meeting. And I got hooked.
And then one thing led to another, and here we are.
And I will say, I did start golf a little bit later than a lot of people, but at the same time, I've played a disgusting amount in that, you know, in that stretch of time.
So you've made up for it.
Oh, absolutely. Not Scott Tarsi level playing 400 rounds a year, but respect to that, but I don't think my body could handle it. But I've played a lot in, you know, just starting and since starting in my early 20s.
Shout out my man, Scott. He is one of a kind. And I would tell you what, I've never met someone in my life that has played that much golf. And people know we've had him. He was on 5, 6, 7 episodes or so ago. You can go back and listen to the episode. But he was going through his schedule with me. And I'm like, dude, when do you sleep or breathe? Like,
it's crazy, man. It is wild. And he also just had his 8th hole in one recently. So, man, that guy is living, I think, living the life most of us would if we could.
Yeah. Yeah. And I noticed that he, you know, he played on the tour. He's another guy that was like, hey, you got to have Craig on. You got to have, I'm like, yeah, we've, don't worry. Like, we've been talking and, you know, but you know how life is. Yeah. One thing gets into the next and then it's like 3 months go by. I'm like, hey, you still want to do that podcast? And you're like, yeah. Wanted to do it 3 months ago. I was like, I know.
And Tarsi's actually a perfect example of what the tour is about. He clearly has a very competitive background in golf. So he's able to compete against everyone else, just newer golfers as well. And we found a way to make it fairly equitable. And to kind of answer something you mentioned earlier about just how scoring works and things like that, we do have prizes for both net and gross. So we reward both sides of it. But also with that, I work in finance and numbers, and I'm kind of a numbers nerd in general. So I worked out a weighted handicap system. Since just out of sheer pace of play, which we know events can get kind of long. So what I did was I created a couple augmented rules. So out of bounds, this is my soapbox. I absolutely hate the USGA out of bounds rule. It's so punitive when it's the same exact thing as a red stake. Play it as required lateral hazard that you can't hit from within. That's my soapbox.
Awesome. So, we do the same thing in high school golf here. Exactly. You know, unless we're in districts or states, because these kids are playing 18 holes after school.
Yeah.
You know, and you're talking about 8 players on a team, and sometimes we can't shotgun. So you have 8 tee times between the first person and the last person. So let's keep it under the rules of golf, right? But let's be smart. Let's use common sense and let's get around the course.
Yep. And that's my personal soapbox. And because I started my own league, so that's pretty convenient. So because of people getting benefits from, you know, that type of rule or specific like drop rules, which would be a little bit more punitive, we have a sliding scale of handicaps in like 5 point increments. It's like scratch to 5 handicap gets 100%. A 5 to a 10 gets, I think, like 93% of their handicap, and then so on and so forth. Every 5 strokes, 7% difference. And I've run the analytics, and this is based off of the past couple of years. It's always kind of a morphing thing, but that percentage really correlates directly to how many max scores a golfer is getting in their handicap bracket, as well as kind of how much that neutralizes the kind of stroke differential they would have gotten, you know, if we were playing kind of the real out of bounds rules or the real full USGA rules.
Yeah. So I mean, a fully equitable way of scoring all the way around.
Exactly. And again, huge numbers nerd over here. So that type of stuff is really fun. Going through every single event, I have a huge data set over the past couple of years of every single event. So I'm able to just query all of it and figure out what I need to, you know, tweak those analytics to make it really equitable and truly beneficial and even throughout the entire field. So that's fun.
I'll get into, you know, your full-time job and how you have time for this, but I want to circle back. You said gross and net prizes, awesome. Mm-hmm. So anybody has a chance at winning. Are those coming from sponsors? And if so, how are the sponsorships working? I'm assuming now that you've been doing it for a while, it's probably a lot easier to gain sponsors than maybe it was in the past.
It's a weird hit or miss situation. Originally, when I started all of this, I reached out to a few just local golf-related businesses that I liked and kind of gave them the story of, you know, what our mission is and what we're actually trying to do. And luckily, everyone in the golf industry in the Raleigh area, honestly, great people. There's very few people that I've met that I'm like, you know, I don't really want to talk to you ever again. So luckily, talking to all these people in the area, kind of giving them the idea of what we're doing and what we're trying to get after. A lot of them were very quick to hop on board and support and, you know, kind of try to provide any sort of help that they can. I will say, as far as gross and net prizes, one thing I do steer away from in the league is cash prizes. We do have optional money games. So close to the pin and skins. Who doesn't love a couple dollars on those things? And
sure,
it's pretty fun. But I did find, I experimented with doing a couple of cash prizes and things like that. It really does bring in a certain type of golfer, but it also, more importantly, scares away a large market of golfers that, like I was talking about earlier, we're just trying to make it accessible to everyone. And kind of having big money on the line really makes it very intimidating for a large amount of people. So doing physical prizes really kind of just enabled a new group of people to be really interested in it. Granted, you do also get some, a lot of like event credits for winning and things like that. But we also have Strixon golf balls. We have a couple simulator places around here, specifically Brookfields up in Wake Forest. They provide gift certificates, things like that. Lion Loft, they create great products and prints of courses. They donate some custom prints for that. And then we also just work with a lot of other people in the Triangle because, again, community aspect for both the golfers and the golf industry down here is kind of my mission. So any sort of new golf company that's popping up around here, I try to reach out to them as early as possible and see if there's anything I can do to personally help them. And nowadays, I've been lucky enough to, you know, have a pretty decent following that when a new golf spot does pop up in the Raleigh or Central North Carolina area, a lot of people will reach out to me very early on. So it's kind of really morphed, as you kind of alluded to, of I reach out to people in the beginning, trying to help out as much as possible, kind of make it a very cohesive, beneficial thing for all sides. And now a lot of places are reaching out to me, which is really humbling. And I find that really cool. And honestly, any new golf stuff in Central North Carolina, I am very glad to hype up and, you know, tell to my people because nothing is ever hurt by more and more golf things.
Yeah, that's so true. So if you're in and around the area, reach out to Craig. You know, get yourself featured on this tour. I got to tell you, Craig, I do love the integration between what you're doing with the tour and the community. And not even just, you know, kind of the golf community, because there's so many other people that are supported by these brands that are, you know, sponsoring your tour. It's got to be a lot to manage a full-time tour, full-time job. I know you just closed on a house, so congrats to that as well. I mean,
you
kind of have to be living like in the middle of a cyclone almost, I'm assuming.
There's no shortages of things in the back of my mind. The beauty of it is I absolutely love it. And I will give one huge shout out. My wife is absolutely amazing. She is so patient and has to put up with me talking about golf stuff nonstop and me just throwing random ideas her way, even though she has no idea what I'm talking about at all.
But is Anna, she a golfer at all?
I hate this story so much. She recently took a learn to play lesson or a session with another wife from the league, and she loved it. She has so much fun. Like, she has a very good natural swing. But the annoying part of this story is even prior, a couple of years ago, I think it was 2019 or something like that, there's a little pitch and putt course near us that's recent, about to close the doors, which is very sad for the community here.
Oh, but, that sucks.
I know, it's terrible. But we needed something new to do outside. Took her to the driving range, 30 minutes on the range, just showing her how to hold a club and hit one. Well, we get out to the pitch and putt. She's hitting a three wood the entire time. The holes are like from 50 yards to 120. Hits three wood every one. We get to the sixth hole. She hits a three wood, stays 3 feet off the ground the entire time, right in the back of the hole.
Yes, I knew it. I knew this where the story was going. Tell me you've been playing all these years and you have no hole in ones.
Nope. So anytime I talk about having a bad round or anything, she's like, why? It's easy.
Just do it like I do it. Hit it in the hole the first time.
Exactly. And what makes it even worse and just hurts me to the core and hurts a lot of golfers like me to the core, the second time we played, maybe two and a half years later, played the same place, 30 minutes on the range, reminding her how to hold a club. The second hole, about 6 inches from a hole in one.
Oh my gosh.
Like, come on. This does not help my case at all.
Maybe she really should start playing.
Yeah. So luckily with that learn to play session, her and one of the other wives in the league, Leanne, did it, fell in love. And we've played a couple scrambles together. And Hannah and I went to Cabo for our honeymoon not terribly long ago and played vacation golf. So now I think it's something that she really enjoys. And yeah, hopefully something we can keep doing over time.
Very cool. That's neat. That's neat. Give me some of the insights to some difficulties that you might have during a given year when trying to plan or set up this tour.
Yeah. So one big thing comes with, it's kind of a two-part of hecticness. During the season, my main issues come from golfers. So I provide all sorts of information, in info emails leading up to the event, all of those things. Golfers, I've learned, don't really enjoy reading information provided to them. I also, I learned that in 2020, in the 2021 season. In the 2022 season, I paired all of kind of my info email with kind of a YouTube video and just like intro for the event and what you need, all that good stuff. Golfers also don't like to listen to those. So during the season, my big issues come from, you know, people showing up just unprepared or late or just kind of not understanding what we're really about. And like, that's fine. Just a conversation normally mitigates that. We have some, like, pretty much I've met so many fantastic people. There are a couple bad apples that kind of ruin the bunch occasionally. There's been maybe like three golfers which kind of got blacklisted by just being overly annoying, let's say. But the other half of kind of the hecticness or the tough part of the league and running all of this is actually this time of year. So during the season, people see me in the normal stress and all of that. But the way all of this works through an entire season is around October to December is the time where I have to call all the courses or email all the courses, try to organize an entire full season. And this all happens behind the scenes, so no one ever really sees, you know, this portion.
Yeah, this is when the real legwork is getting done.
And the reason why things seem so fluid during an actual season is really because the amount of hours and the amount of stress and the amount of just like, pushing and taxing stuff that I do this time of year. So yeah, all of, pretty much the legwork this time of year really just makes for a pretty smooth rest of the year. So it's kind of the give and take there.
All right, so give me a day in the life of tournament day. Take a 1 day tournament, and run through it for me and for the listeners your responsibilities and what a day looks like for you.
Yeah. So first thing I will mention is one of my rules is I will host these events as long as I am still able to play.
Okay, I was gonna ask that. Okay, so you do get to play in them.
Yes, I do. I'm always in the last tee time. That way I'm able to see off every group, give them kind of a rule sermon and their scorecards, and honestly just chat with golfers, which is my favorite thing. But yes, I do play in every event, and that was kind of my one main rule for myself. If I'm not playing in these events, honestly, that takes away a lot of the reasons why I did this, because I'm the target market of this. Like, I wanted to play competitive stuff. I wanted to meet new people. So yeah, selfishly, I want to still play in all of these, regardless of how big things get. But day in the life. So I normally show up about an hour and a half, 2 hours prior to the first tee time. I go in, you know, I pay for everything to the course. I work with the head pro or whoever's in the shop and the starters, anything that I need to relay to my golfers, things like that. Just kind of doing the admin, kind of playing nice with the course stuff. I set up some signs and things like that. One unique thing about us is we don't actually have like a check-in table or anything like that. Your check-in time is you meeting me at the first tee. That way it's a little bit less rigorous and just kind of seems a little bit more approachable than, you know, some other like more official events with a check-in table, things like that. So I get a couple strokes in, get a couple, little bit of warm up. Then I end up just chatting with everyone and getting all of that. Whenever the tee times start rolling out, I just have every group meet me like 15 minutes before their tee time at the first tee, give them the rules lecture. So I pretty much stand there for like 2 hours as the tee time's rolling out, just interacting with the golfers, making sure that they're having a good time. They really know what it's about. Because realistically, one of the biggest reasons why I do this is because of the people that I get to meet. So I just want to make sure that I get to personally chat with every single person. So I send all of them out. I go out in the last group. This is like 3 hours after I started warming up. So the first three holes I normally view as like, you know, completely throwaway mentally.
Yeah. Your secondary warm up.
Exactly. Those first three holes, if they're bad, doesn't shake me at all. If they're good, you know, I'm the best golfer ever and, you know, I'm going to win. But no. So then the round goes naturally through all this. I have to keep logged into like the Blue Golf apps for like the tournament directors and everything like that. Monitor pace of play through the app. Through that, I can kind of see if one group is falling really behind the group in front of them. I can choose some text messages and be like, hey, you know, get your shit together and pick up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I don't know if I can curse on here or not. But
you definitely can. It's our podcast.
Okay. Yeah, you can do whatever you want, right? Yeah, so I monitor that type of stuff, make sure pace of play is looking good, make sure that, you know, logistically wise and admin wise, through my personal round, I'm always on those apps and the Blue Golf website, making sure that, you know, everything is running fluidly for everyone else playing. Then after that, when I finish my round, just collect scorecards, hang out with people, just chat a little bit. And then when I get home at night, I review the scores, make everything officially finalized after I kind of do some due diligence, making sure there was like everything aligns properly between the paper scorecards and the app live leaderboard. And then from there, I, you know, release the points from the standings into the season long leaderboard. I write kind of this blog post about, you know, how the event went, the winners, hype off people that had, you know, fun stuff happen during the round and things like that. And then I go to bed, like around 1 a.m.
So needless to say, an extremely long, draining day.
Yes.
With going out in the last group, can you or do you get to enjoy yourself out there? I mean, you get that full experience. Are there ever any times where you're kind of like, man, I wish I could just focus on my game right now you know, instead of having to be kind of mayor of RDU?
It's in the beginning, it was really tough. I had a hard time playing good golf with also so much, you know, on my shoulders and so many people texting me through around and things like that.
Yeah, now, so much on your mind that would take it away from the actual golf, I'd believe.
Oh, 100%. But nowadays, I'm much better at compartmentalizing. One good thing about this personally for my actual golf game, it has let me fully embody the whole, you know, just start line. When I'm above a ball, I'm not thinking about literally anything else aside from the job that I'm doing right then and there. Once I finish that, I'm able to go back to kind of tour director style and answer all the text messages I'm getting through the event, go back to like monitoring pace of play and things like that. So this really has forced me to be able to compartmentalize and, you know, just focus on shots when I need to focus on shots and then be able to chat and have fun any other time.
I noticed that you were starting to expand a little bit outside of North Carolina. I saw that in May you had a 2-day major at King's Mill in Williamsburg and Royal New Kent in Providence Forge in Virginia. Is that something that you want to expand, pardon the pun, expand upon in the future, is to expand the tour into a bigger area? Or was that something that just kind of came about by happenstance?
So I mentioned earlier that I lived in Richmond, Virginia for a while. Richmond's public golf scene is a little bit lacking. So I ended up spending a lot of time down in the Williamsburg area because it is a fantastic golf destination. People might not realize it, but there are some bangers out there that need to be seriously considered to go out there. So knowing that, the reason why that Williamsburg trip happened was, you know, I wanted to do a kind of away trip and just kind of introduce people to more courses that they absolutely should, that are very, very within driving distance. So from the Raleigh area, I think it was Williamsburg was only like three and a half hours away. So really just honestly not a bad day trip or just a weekend trip with an endless amount of good golf. So I wanted to kind of show off not just our area, but, you know, other places aside from Myrtle Beach that people can, you know, go to for a little golf destination.
Yeah, I mean, Williamsburg in and of itself, I mean, Kingsmill is phenomenal. I've been there, and the river course is amazing. The other two courses are great. There's that Golden Horseshoe, which is right there
so
as well.
Solid.
Yeah, another phenomenal course. I mean, that's really cool. I mean, you guys really do have a good three and a half hour radius of some phenomenal courses down there.
Oh, absolutely. Because Myrtle Beach is kind of the easy go-to for everyone down here. But still, within that driving distance, there's Williamsburg. Also, Charlottesville, Virginia is kind of around the four-hour mark of driving. But that place really needs to be considered by a lot of golfers to go visit. There are some great courses there as well. But yeah, also, I will mention in Williamsburg, they do have two Mike Strantz courses. And above anything else, RDU Golf Tour is just kind of a Mike Strantz stan league. Like, we just love everything that man does. We have two courses down here. He has two courses up in Williamsburg. He has two in Myrtle Beach. So, like, if we can have Mike Strantz on the schedule every year, that's what we're going to do.
Well, you've got so down by you, you've got what? Tobacco Road and Tot Hill, right? Okay.
Yep.
What are the ones in Virginia?
Up in Williamsburg, there is Royal New Kent and Stonehouse.
Okay. Well, that's funny. I didn't know Stonehouse was. I knew Royal New Kent. I haven't played, but, you know, familiar with.
Yeah, Royal New Kent is absolutely fantastic since they do try to bring in kind of link style, kind of the Ireland feel and things like that. And it was, oh, I just love that place. They also went through a renovation a couple of years ago, and it's night and day. The place, they did it right. Like, I love when courses do the good stuff that they should be.
Yeah, well, Strantz is definitely a solid architect to get behind.
100%. I was going to just finish off one of your questions from earlier. As far as kind of the expansion of what this is, like I mentioned earlier, honestly, I never even expected or really wanted this to be the size that it is now. Again, super humbled and appreciative of how large it has gotten, and I love everyone that I've met through it. So to expand like nationally or regionally was never really on the initial radar, but I've actually had plenty of people reach out to me, say, hey, I like what you're doing. I think it's really cool. Would you be willing to like help me set one up in my town? So I've had multiple different cities reach out to me. One of the most notable ones is Queen City Golf Tour out in Charlotte. A couple of guys that I've known for a little while, really, really good dudes, Trey and Greg, which Greg just had his first baby. So congrats to he and his wife. And yeah, they reached out, said, hey, Charlotte Market could probably use something exactly like this. Would you mind if we kind of leveraged whatever information? So I spent a lot of time on calls with them, helping them kind of navigate through all of this. Because one big rule I had for myself is, honestly, there's no secret recipe behind any of this. Like, you call courses, you email courses, you book things out and kind of hope that you can sell out events. It's really just that. So help them out. Anyone that asks me, I'm generally very willing to, unless they come off really weird and don't understand what this is really about. So one good example is someone did reach out to me fairly recently. I will field a call from anyone, again, open book, glad to answer any questions. I'm just here to help the golf world as much as I possibly can. That's kind of my mission. Someone reached out to me and said, hey, I like what you're doing. I see that you guys are playing at a lot of private courses. I want to play golf for free and I want to play a bunch of private courses. Can I set one of these up in my town? You can, but I'm not going to help if that's kind of what you're getting after. Yeah.
The ulterior motive.
Yeah. Literally anyone can run one of these as long as they're fairly organized, have a lot of patience and thick skin, and as long as you kind of do it for the right reasons. Because golfers can easily tell when, you know, something's weird. But if, you know, you're doing things the right way, generally people will come to you.
How many hours would you say you spend a week doing RDU tour work?
Too many to count. So it really blends into a few things. I'm fairly good at compartmentalizing kind of, you know, my personal professional life and my golf life. But this really has turned into, there's so many people reaching out to me about, you know, I'm new to the Raleigh or Triangle area. What courses should I look at? I'm thinking about, you know, joining this or this place. Can you give me your opinions? You know, I need a bachelor party, like foursome somewhere. Can you suggest a course? Yeah. So I've really honestly become like weirdly a liaison for the Triangle area, which I didn't actually anticipate doing, but you know, I know way too much about every course around here. So it would be selfish of me not to, you know, help some people out. The lines have blurred from like, you know, the work hours that I put into like setting up a schedule and things like that. And, you know, me just chatting with golfers, which is what I love to do.
Yeah, that's I always say on this podcast, like if you're into golf and you're a cool person, like we're already friends. You know what I mean? Yeah. We just need to hash out the other details. That's it.
Exactly. That's honestly what it's all about.
Let's end on this note because I love finding new places. I love exploring. I love traveling. What have been some of the new courses that you've found through running the tour?
Yeah. Are you just talking about
Central North Carolina? Which ones? Yes. Any of them, actually, you know, even if it's from somebody, you know, that played on the tour is like, hey, man, I belong to this course here. Come and play it with me. Check it out.
Yeah. So this has opened up a significant amount of opportunities to me. One of my favorite courses that I play fairly regularly now is Country Club of North Carolina. One of my buddies is on the subreddit. His name's Logan, fantastic gentleman. He invited me out to his course and like wanted to play in some of my events and things like that, and turned out to become one of my favorite people around. So I play there regularly and it's become easily one of my favorite courses. Just through golf connections, one of my favorite ones down in Pinehurst that I've played recently now is Forest Creek. That place is absolutely phenomenal. And probably would not have gotten that opportunity if I wasn't, you know, running something like this or like just chatting with golfers in the area. But
that's fully private, right? Forest Creek?
Yes. They have two courses. So. It is just unbridled, just Sandhills goodness. Like, it's so good. And then like the other one that the other like nice course that I play semi occasionally is Old Chatham up in the Raleigh area. Through the league, I've met some members there and get invited out, and that place is just so pure and so good. But as far as like accessible courses, because we can always talk about like the fancy private courses, but the ones that people should know more about, that they should really, you know, go and check out, especially down in the Pinehurst area, because I do know that you're going down there, and I can't wait to hear every minute of that trip.
This is very true.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait to listen to that recap pod from you. I do love all of those. I will say Mid-South is definitely one of the underappreciated courses.
Yeah, it's a great course.
It flies under the radar, but it is just so good. 9 and 18 share a green, and both those holes are just so spectacular. And the people running it, it's a partnership of Mid-South Club and Tallamore. They do absolutely great things. And also Tallamore, their sister course, just redid their range. They have a putting course now and lodges to stay at, as well as added a top tracer to their range. So that's
It's funny you mentioned that. So Nikki, who is kind of, Nikki Conforti is just, one of the phenomenal people down in the Sandhills. I know she listens, and I try to give her a shout out as often as I can, and always direct people down there. She set it up. She's so good. She set up a tea time for us, myself and the boys, Thanksgiving morning, nice and early so we can get out and then get back in time. But also 2 hours at the range there on Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, before we play the next morning, to kind of check everything out, you know, do some videos and kind of just give people more insight and show people what it's like down there. And, if you had the chance, you don't follow them, go to Tallamore on Instagram, follow, because they did a great piece on the reconstruction of their putting green. And they redid, like you said, the whole entire range, and it's fully lit now. And it's just, it's incredible. I mean, it really, all the courses down there push each other to become better. And I think it's just very difficult to find a course that is not fun to play down there.
Exactly. You can come to the Pinehurst or Sandhills area in general, and you don't have to set foot on the Pinehurst Resort property at all. But if you do set foot on that, you know, that is just childlike wonder. You know, it's golf heaven. But you can come down to that area and never set foot on the Pinehurst Resort and have one of the best golf trips possible.
Yeah, I've so funny story. We go down every Thanksgiving, and I've been guests of the resort numerous times. You know, thankfully and very humbly, believe me, they're great to us. But this time down, the only thing we're doing at the resort is a lesson for both my boys with their head pro Kelly Mitchum. I'm not playing a single course at the resort, and our itinerary is completely booked.
Yep,
and that's everything is still world class.
100%. There is no end to the amount of good courses down here. And then even just one roundabout away from the Pinehurst Resort is Longleaf Golf Club.
Yep.
So it is the home of the U.S. Kids Golf Academy. And it is such a phenomenal course. It is so fun. The majority of people just don't know it exists because there's just so many heavy hitters just all around it. And that's, like, for locals, if they're going down there, that's one course I love to, you know, send them out to, because they also have a 6-hole par 3 short course.
Yeah, bottle and, brush.
Yep, I'm a sucker for any sort of short course or putting course, anything that. It just really, really ties everything together.
That is one of my favorite things to do. And then obviously you mentioned the Cradle down there and Thistledew at Pinehurst Resort. Yeah, it's phenomenal. I will say this, though. Now, I love Longleaf. I love the history to it. I love the horse racing track that plays through. It's a great place. Mm-hmm. I looked up tee times for coming down this week, and the prices were just astronomical. Like, their prices literally have tripled over the last 3-4 years. And it's probably been about 2 years, 2.5 years since I've played there. And I was honestly blown away by the prices that I was seeing.
I will say that is one course that has taken a huge bump. Naturally, we know 2020 really did create a lot of just interest in the golf world. And nowadays, there is a lot of golf travel. And naturally, Pinehurst is one of the meccas. So pretty much every course in this area has blown up exponentially as far as pricing wise goes. And that does kind of stink quite a bit. And I do know Longleaf is one of them. My hope from my, you know, again, personal professional life is kind of in corporate finance. So I do hope a lot of these courses are leveraging this kind of short-term golf boom in the industry and kind of stocking a lot of this away, because I think we all know this gigantic boom isn't going to last forever. So hopefully they're capitalizing and also just making sure that, you know, in 5 to 10 years, we don't see a lot of like extra closures happening. So hopefully they're just lining their income statements and balance sheets properly. And that's one reason why I try not to hearken too much on increase in rates, as long as hopefully they're doing the correct financial things in the background for long-term sustainability.
Yeah, it was just, you know what, Longleaf was always that course down there that you could get for, you know, $30, $25 at twilight and, you know, walk. And then just to see what it was now, I was like, oh, gosh. And, you know, it's no problem when you're playing by yourself, but I'm playing with both my boys as well, so everything's tripled. You know, when I'm looking at prices to a course, it's not 1X, you know, it's 3X.
Nope, definitely understand, especially with my wife starting to play a little bit now. Tea time prices have doubled for me.
I completely understand. Craig, look, I can't even thank you enough for your time, because it's so insightful. And believe me, I had no idea what went into running an establishment like this. And it is turning into an establishment in Central North Carolina. Let people know where they can find you, how they can get in touch. I know you can sign up for the newsletter for the tour. Plug the Instagram. Give people everything that they need.
Yeah, absolutely. So Instagram is at RDU Golf Tour. Website is rdugolftour.com. And we have a Facebook group, RDU Golf Tour. If you don't notice a trend there, you know, just that. But I run it all, and I'm the one behind the Instagram. So if you ever have any questions or need anything, just know you're talking directly to me, so feel free to reach out. I'm, as always, just open to answer any questions. I'm an open book to anyone.
I didn't know that there was a Facebook page.
Yeah, there is.
Now I did. I joined. It says pending. You better accept that request.
Don't worry. I just got the notification. Automatic decline.
Dude, this has been awesome. So now look, in December, we're going to be starting a series where we're going to have people on and they're going to talk about their favorite courses. We're going to kind of have a format, and every episode is going to kind of be the same, you know, same exact format, so people get used to it. But it's going to be about courses that they love, maybe little hole in the wall places that people don't know about. I'm hoping that we can count on you to maybe do one or two in that, you know, triangle region down in North Carolina.
Oh, dude, I gotcha. I also might be able to pass on a couple of buddies that can go into very granular detail of everything. But yeah, trust me, there's no shortage of hidden gems that I love to talk about. So I'm glad to hop on it.
Love it. Well, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate it, man.
All right, people. So either get busy golfing or get busy dying.